You're listening to Simpler One Earth Living from Jubilee One Earth Economics and Simple Living Works with co-hosts Lee Van Ham and Jerry Iverson. Today we feature a conversation with Margaret Bullitt Jonas, Creation Care Missioner with the Episcopal Church and the United Church of Christ. Greetings, Lee, from Paso Robles, California, and Simple Living Works.
Greetings to you, Jerry, from San Diego and Jubilee One Earth Economics. You know, it's really kind of exciting here that we're pre-recording this episode of our podcast on the opening day of the UN Climate Action Summit in New York. That's September 23 that we're pre-recording this on, and that's the day the summit opens. That summit has triggered a host of activities leading up to it. And I might say that the UN Secretary General is very optimistic at this moment, not because he's so sure of what's going to come out of this summit, but he just feels the movement changing. So that's something for us to be paying attention to. Is the climate movement moving to a new level? In my mind, the answer is yes, and here's the reason why. Even though the U.S. president is skipping that meeting, despite the fact that two-thirds of the citizens of the U.S. now want action on climate change, you know, the rest of the participants in this U.N. General Assembly are figuring out how to proceed without full U.S. participation. But despite that caveat there, two important things are happening in relationship to the summit. One has to do with the press. Reporting on climate in the press has long been really disappointing. There's just been too little of it. And natural disasters, which are clearly related to climate change by scientific understandings, have been covered without even mentioning the connection to climate change. But for these news outlets, and by these I mean over 250 news outlets, that's going to change. These outlets are around the world, and they have made an agreement to change their reporting. The agreement is called Covering Climate Now. Newsrooms are in conversations about covering climate in a sustained way, rather than an occasional report or occasional special, which in many cases hasn't even mentioned the relationship of the event or the disaster to the climate. Well, The Guardian and CBS News are among these outlets, and together they reach nearly a billion people globally. The Guardian is also changing its language, and others may be doing the same, but the Guardian is quite explicit. They'll increase the use of other descriptors rather than just climate change. They're going to start using climate disruption, climate breakdown, climate emergency, and then instead of global warming, they now prefer global heating. So let's be watching what the press is going to be doing going forward, especially with outlets like The Guardian and CBS. Then the other major change that's happened just happened this past Friday, September 20, which is the youth-led climate strikes. Youth led the way in the largest global climate action in the history of the planet. Over 4 million people were in the streets in countries around the world. And this is pretty amazing. It's never happened before, and the fact that so many teenagers were the ones in charge. Right here in San Diego area, we didn't have a big numerical event in the center of the city, although we did have San Diego High School marching from their school to the center of the city and holding a rally there. In many ways, it was really significant to me that 25 different middle schools and high schools organized in some fashion an event around this climate action. There were strikes in that many schools, with full support, by the way, of two of the school boards, one in San Diego and one in an area called Sweetwater. These school boards told their administrations to support the students and the faculty to do the same. Now, it's interesting to me, Jerry, that you participated in a school-led climate strike up in your area in Paso Robles, and please share a little bit about that.
Thanks, Lee. Yes, here on the Central Coast, San Luis Obispo County, there were at least four actions in four different towns. I'm in the North County and live in Paso Robles, so I went to the strike led by the students at the Paso Robles High School at the downtown city park. It was an all-morning affair. There were a number of speakers, singers, time for questions and comments, so it was really quite inspiring. I would guess there were about 60 people there, about half of them students, and the other half were more senior citizens like myself. We here at Simpler One Earth Living podcast are joining in. Well, for this episode, we'll be asking questions like, what is a creation care missioner? Well, the Reverend Dr. Margaret Bullitt Jonas will explain that and why creation care is a deeply spiritual matter. And she'll tell us about her new book expected out in November, Rooted and Rising, Voices of Courage in a Time of Climate Crisis. Now, the Reverend Dr. Margaret Bullitt Jonas, Ph.D., is an author, retreat leader, and Episcopal priest. In a pioneering ecumenical partnership, she serves as missioner for creation care for both the Episcopal Diocese of Western Massachusetts and the Massachusetts Conference of the United Church of Christ. A longtime climate activist, she believes that the ecological crisis, from climate change to the extinction of species, calls us to claim our kinship with all creation, to look deeply into our sources of hope, and to work together to build a just and sustainable future. Her website, revivingcreation.org, is a base camp, giving people a place to rest and reflect, to learn and find encouragement. Some viewers may be burned out activists looking for spiritual guidance. Some may be seekers wondering how faith and ecology connect. Some may be looking for a bit of insight, a flash of humor, or an idea of what to do next in their ongoing quest to be agents of healing, hope, and justice in the world. The planet needs everybody's gifts, and everyone has a part to play. So this, as she says, is an all-hands-on-deck moment, and we're glad we're here.
Thanks, Jerry, for those words of introduction, and let's go now to the pre-recorded interview that you did with Margaret.
So, Margaret, you're on tour, and I'm so glad you're here with us today at Bethel Lutheran ELCA in Templeton. You're also speaking tonight in San Luis Obispo, and then leading a workshop tomorrow in San Luis Obispo. And so you are a missioner for creation care for both the Episcopal Church and the United Church of Christ. So I'd like you to summarize what you're going to tell our people today. But first of all, what is a missioner?
It's delightful to be here with you, Jerry. Thank you for inviting me to speak. I invented the title Missioner for Creation Care, and let me just explain how it came to be. Years ago, I had an eating disorder and was not in right relationship with my own body. As any addict will tell you of any kind, when you are in the throes of an addiction, you are not listening to the wisdom of your body. I got in recovery in 1982 through the grace of God. It was very much through the 12-step program and surrendering my life to a higher power. And I was so amazed by the power of God to heal my life and my psyche that I finished what I was doing. I was at Harvard University getting a doctorate in Russian and comparative literature. I finished my PhD. And I went straight off to seminary. Who is this God who just saved my life? As it happened, I was ordained in June of 1988, which was the same month that NASA climate scientist James Hansen was testifying to the U.S. Senate about his concern about what he was calling the greenhouse effect. This was, at least to my awareness, the first time that the public began to be informed about the consequences of burning fossil fuels and the dangers of eventual dangers of creating runaway catastrophic climate change. And for whatever reason, God placed that on my heart. I found it very significant that I was ordained in the same month, committing my life to a serving God, in the same month that Jim Hansen was sharing this alarming news with the American public. The way my life and ministry evolved, the question for me became, if God can heal one addict like me and help me restore balance between me and my body and my soul and my psyche, if God can do that for one person, is it not possible that God might do that for all people to help us heal our own relationship with the body of Earth? I was ordained in 88. In the winter spring of 1989, on Good Friday, the Exxon Valdez oil tanker smashed into that reef, and millions of gallons of oil were spilled across the coast. And my husband and I had visited Alaska the summer before. So I took this very much to heart. I took it very personally, and I think it's an important moment for any of us when we begin to take the environmental crisis personally. It matters. It's not just an abstract or theoretical thing. It's something that touches us directly. And I noticed that that was Good Friday, and I began to think about the crucifixion of the earth. So when it was my time to preach next, which was not Easter Sunday, but the following Sunday, because I was a lowly curate, so I preached on that first Sunday after Easter in 1989, the first sermon I had ever preached or ever heard about God's love for the earth, God's love for God's creation, God's urgent call to us to become stewards, custodians of the earth, and to change course, because clearly we were on a death-dealing course. And I talked about eco-conversion, like Saul on the road to Damascus, the scales fall from his eyes, he realizes he's heading the wrong direction, he changes course, and that's what we needed to do. And I sat down after the sermon, and I felt pretty pleased with myself, like that was a pretty good sermon. And at the door of the church, as everyone was leaving, shaking my hand and being very friendly, one woman said to me, very nice woman, she said, thank you for that sermon, but you know, I really don't get it. What does religion have to do with ecology? And it was a great question. I realized that back in the late 80s, very few of us were talking about that, were thinking about that, and that there was a lot of work that we needed to do, certainly in the Christian community, to make it clear, abundantly clear, that God loves and redeems and cares for the whole earth, not just for human beings, but for all our brother, sister, kin. So that became a question for me, what does religion have to do with ecology? What does Christianity have to do with ecology? So I went off into parish ministry, but on the side, I was a climate activist, and a retreat leader and a writer, and eventually, as the climate crisis got more clear, finally, back in 2013, I realized I needed to make a change. I needed to focus on this on full time. So I asked my bishop, I went to my bishop, my wonderful bishop, Doug Fisher, in Diocese of Western Massachusetts, and said, you know, I can't sleep at night because of the climate crisis. Is there any way I could have a job in the diocese? And I thought up the title of Missioner for Creation Care. Missioner is a word that's become quite popular in the Episcopal Church. It means you're on a mission. You're sent out beyond the borders of the building, and you have a larger purpose than being inside the building. And creation care was a way of expressing this is how much God loves all of God's creation, and my job is to help mobilize, educate, inspire people to rise to the occasion in this is quite challenging moment of our planetary history through the power of God to do what we can to be a blessing on earth rather than a curse. So I preach, I speak, I lead retreats, I travel around, obviously not just within Massachusetts, but beyond the borders and here out in California, in my hope that we can come to understand this is not just, the climate crisis is not just a political issue or a scientific issue. It's also a deeply moral and spiritual issue. And that's who we are. We are, as people of faith, we are people who care about morality and spirituality. So I'm hoping to energize people to do what they can in the name of love, in the name of loving God and loving neighbor.
So how will you be approaching that in your talk today?
Well, it seems to me as the as people become more aware of our predicament, I've started thinking of it as an emergency of the heart. You know, the more we know about what's happening with the state of the earth, the more alarmed many of us are. The UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change last year came up with this report saying we have to make changes in our economy and our society that are deep transformational changes, and to make them at a level and at a pace that are unprecedented in human history. So we have to change course fast. And as we look around, we see more and more that the web of life is unraveling before our eyes. I could go into details and examples, but I won't take the time to do that right now. My concern really is, how do we keep our hearts strong? Because the temptation, when we start seeing what's happening, many of us get overwhelmed. We get paralyzed. We get frightened. We start saying things to ourselves like, what can I possibly do? It's too big. It's too hard. I'm just one person. I'm not an expert. I don't have any particular power. And so we can close down, get into a kind of state of inertia and paralysis. And I would like us to realize we have so much more power than we know through the power and grace of God. And you may name God by all kinds of names, different words, but there is a greater power and mystery, a sacred power that we can learn to tap into and breathe into us and breathe through us. It's already breathing through us, to give us the courage to do what needs to be done and to make the changes that we need to make. So that's one of the things I want to say to the group today and tonight, is that faith communities have a very important role to play in helping humanity face this crisis. One thing we can do is we can help ourselves and others address their helplessness. Whenever we gather for prayer or worship, we know we are gathering in the presence of that sacred mystery that loved us into being, that is with us all through our lives, and that will meet us at our journey's end. We open ourselves to that higher power, that greater power. Whenever we gather for prayer, for singing, for reading Holy Scripture, for listening to the word be preached, and whatever your faith tradition, you may not be theistic, you may not believe in God, but non-theistic traditions such as Buddhism, for instance, are very clear that there we can learn to open ourselves to a greater wisdom than what we know when we're just locked into our anxious ego self. So there are ways that when we tap into that deeper power, it addresses our helplessness. We realize we have more power than we knew. A second gift that I think that faith communities can give the world at this challenging time is we can offer rituals and ways of prayer that very directly help us move out of helplessness into empowerment and courage and compassionate action. We need rituals that help us forgive ourselves and experience the forgiveness of God for what we have done and are doing. Rituals that empower us to change course and to make wiser choices. We need rituals and practices that help us grieve and experience the enormous losses that we are witnessing. To me, it's through giving ourselves space to feel our grief, feel our outrage, feel our losses, if we can do that in a sacred context, we know that the divine power is with us, that we are not alone. We don't have to be afraid of our grief. We don't have to be afraid of our fear. We don't have to be afraid of our anger. All these can become good energies to help us take compassionate action.
We'll return momentarily to our conversation with Margaret Bullitt Jonas. But first, this word. A great sign carried by a young person in the climate action strikes of September 20 said, "Our parents taught us to clean up after ourselves, so why do you leave us this mess?" Well, I think that this teenager has it exactly right. At One Earth Jubilee, we are giving you a chance to help clean up your mess, or let me say it, claim it as the mess myself, our mess. We're giving an opportunity for us older folks to clean up our mess, and that is through the planting of trees. If we're putting out a lot of emissions, how do we clean up our emissions? And certainly one way of cleaning out the emissions that we put out by driving our cars places, flying places, heating or cooling our homes, and all the other ways that CO2 is released into the atmosphere is to plant trees. Trees have an amazing capacity to take this CO2 and with the miracle of photosynthesis that arrived on this planet some millions of years ago, we can offset these tons of CO2. If we can plant a trillion trees in the next decade, we can release sequester enough CO2 from the atmosphere to return the carbon levels in the atmosphere to sustainable levels. And so Jubilee Economics Ministries has registered with the Trillion Tree Campaign toward that end, and we have a tree fund which all of us listening can, any of us listening can donate to. So how much do you donate? Well, you look at a calculator. We'll put that calculator in the program notes. You can figure out your ecological footprint on that calculator, your carbon footprint, I should say, on that with the help of that tabulator. And then you can make your contribution in whatever amount feels right to you to the Jubilee Economics Tree Fund, and we can be working together to clean up our mess. Now, let's return to our conversation with Margaret Bullitt Jonas.
A third thing I would say that faith communities can offer is, I'll put the two of these together. We can clarify what moral action is, and we can inspire moral action. Faith communities are all traditions are rooted in a sense of people and the earth belong together. It's the poor and the most marginalized in society who are those who are most vulnerable to the effects of climate change, and often the ones who are least responsible for causing it. So there's a moral dimension to the crisis, a social justice dimension to the crisis. Racial minorities often suffer first and worst from climate change, indigenous peoples. So there's the moral dimension, there's a social justice dimension, there's an intergenerational justice dimension of that we are basically stealing a habitable world from our children. So that's an issue of intergenerational justice, and I am thrilled by movements like the Sunrise Movement and Extinction Rebellion. You know, all these young people around the world, they may not identify as people of faith, though I know that many of them do, because I've met a number of them, and they come from faith traditions. But they're rising up saying, look, we want this world to carry forward. We want to have clean air and clean water and soil that's good soil that grows things. So there's a moral dimension, and we can take bold action. Faith communities at their best can be at the front of movements. I think of the civil rights movements or the civil rights movement or the women's movement and all the social justice movements. we know in this country and around the world where religious people of faith, people who tap into a deep religion, feel empowered to step up and say the powers that be have no right to destroy the world and to break apart human communities. So I think faith communities have a great deal to offer at this moment in history.
And then tomorrow night, what do you hope to accomplish in a longer workshop?
Well, one thing I hope we can do tomorrow is really take some time in a more meditative way to experience our interconnections with the natural world. One thing I've been learning is that it's not just a situation where human beings need to heal the earth. It's also a situation where we need to receive the healing of the earth. The more deeply I go into this, the more I experience the ways that the natural world and its beings are connected with human life and also are eager to support human life. I remember the first time I was arrested for an act of civil disobedience. It was down in Washington, D.C. back in 2001, protesting the Department of Energy's intention to drill for oil in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. And I remember when we were released from jail that night, I just had this sense that the trees were thanking me. And, you know, that may be a complete fantasy, it may be a complete act of imagination, but I really do feel that human beings exist inside the web of life. We are not separate from it or distinct from it. We are deeply interrelated with it. With every breath, we are breathing in what green living things are giving us. They're giving us life, as breathing in the oxygen they have given us. And as we breathe out carbon dioxide that they in turn take up. So just by breathing, we're connected to each other. So I'm hoping to do some exercises with folks to help reawaken that sense of felt connection with the natural world. And I'm also going to walk people through a very simple framework for the heart for staying strong in a time of climate emergency. And I can give you the brief synopsis of this framework for the heart, which is, I call it now cultivating an awakened heart, accepting a broken heart, and manifesting a radiant heart. And what I mean by that, cultivating an awakened heart means cultivating practices where we awaken to how beloved we are and how beloved the whole of creation is. So all those moments when we've been touched by love, when we look into someone's eyes and know that we're loved, or we look out at the glorious sunset and just go, wow, what a gift to be alive. All those are moments of our heart awakening, and we touch into this love, a divine love, I would say, that nothing can destroy. And that, to me, is the foundation of everything else. We live at a time when we hear things like human beings are a virus on the planet, human beings are a cancer on the planet. And I really understand the anger and grief behind statements like that. And I also agree that a lot of our economic and political systems are, in fact, taking down life on the planet. Yet I don't think we can find a way forward if we are filled with self-hatred. We need to stay rooted, I think, stay rooted in love, and then start creating new economic paradigms, new ways of inhabiting this planet so that we are manifesting that love that we know. So that's an awakened heart, touching into our deep belovedness. The broken heart is when we let our hearts break as we acknowledge the trees that are falling, as we acknowledge the seas that are rising, as we acknowledge the fact that 60% of the world's population of wild animals has disappeared, has vanished, has been killed since 1970. So that more than half the world's animals have vanished in the last 50 years. It's astonishing and it's heartbreaking. So to find ways to let ourselves grieve and acknowledge the fact that we care enough to weep and protest and feel our emotional response. I think that's essential if we're not going to go kind of numb. And I think that will keep us in love, keep us awake to the presence of the divine love that will never let us go if we dare to feel our feelings. And the third is to manifest a radiant heart, and that is when we decide, my heart is awakened, I've been touched by love, my heart is broken, I admit how much I care, and I am now going to go out in the world with a radiant heart, doing whatever I can do to be a person who heals, who works for justice, who does whatever compassionate action I can do to meet this climate emergency. So I hope to walk through that framework.
That's very inspiring. Thank you. I understand that you're writing a book or have issued a book recently.
Yeah, thanks for mentioning that. I'm so interested in spiritual resilience, and that I ended up with a colleague of mine, Leah Shade. We have co-edited a book called Rooted and Rising, Voices of Courage in a Time of Climate Crisis. And it will be published, I hope, if all goes well, this November 2019, by Roman and Littlefield. And it's an anthology of essays. There are 21 essays by 21 different people, all faith-based, a range of social locations. So we've everything from community organizers, professors, theologians, scientists, one woman who used to be a zookeeper. They're all doing what they can in their lives to address the climate crisis, and they're all doing it from places of faith. And we ask them, what keeps you strong? What gives you courage to keep going when you know how overwhelming this issue is? And their answers are very diverse. I found that very interesting. They have very different ways of answering that question, which I think is a fundamental question. And the book has study questions in it so that it's great for study groups, and it also includes spiritual practices, so there are things that you can do at home or with a small group that are very practical, just ways of learning to open oneself to the presence of the holy. So I'm hoping that Rooted and Rising will, it's kind of like, this is what I want to offer the people who are concerned about the climate crisis, and I hope it will make a difference.
How do you see overpopulation and overconsumption playing into the climate crisis?
That's a great question. Overpopulation feels like the big topic that we don't dare talk about. Like it's unspeakable for all kinds of reasons. It has efforts to reduce populations of one group of people or another. It has a long, thorny history, and there are religious traditions which are wary of birth control, or I guess you would call it artificial contraception. So it's a complicated topic. But I think we can all agree that that this enormous human population that is burdening the planet, I'm in my late 60s, and I think in my lifetime the human population, maybe it's doubled in my lifetime. It's extraordinary. And I've read somewhere like the weight of human beings and their domestic animals is more than the weight of wildlife. I mean, if you just look at the scales of what's happening to populations of wildlife, what's happening to populations of humans, it's clearly like a seesaw. There are too many of us, so we have to figure out a way. We have to figure out a way to be able to talk about this. And then we have to figure out a way toward just solutions, because clearly the problem is not just too many people, it's also an unjust distribution of the world's resources. So a small percentage of people, like my group here in North America, we gobble up a huge percentage of the world's resources compared to the rest of the world. We're living way beyond our means in terms of the carrying capacity of the planet. So we do need to talk about overpopulation, and we do need to talk about overconsumption. There are folks in this world who have nothing, who have below subsistence, who are getting nothing. And then there are folks in this world who have much, much more than they need, and it's not even making them happy. So we need to figure out ways to, I'm sounding like a socialist, but there you go, I'm a follower. I'm a follower of Jesus. We need to figure out a way to make it more just so that we can share, so that we live more with more generosity and less anxious hoarding, so that we learn to find joy in delighting in each other's company and not thinking that the latest technological marvel or the latest car or the latest piece of clothing is going to make us happy, because ultimately those things, those material things, are not going to make us happy. So in a way, that's good news. Like, if we figure it out that, you know, we may have piles of stuff, but it's actually not making us happy, maybe then that will help nudge us in the direction of let's figure out a way to buy less, to reduce what we buy, the amount of what we buy, and just start simplifying our lives. I know I have a long way to go in that direction, and I admire people like you who have made this a life commitment.
You've been listening to the second half of our conversation with Margaret Bullitt Jonas. In future episodes, we'll talk about workshop ownership, housing, and about Lee's new book, The Liberating Birth of Jesus, a birth story able to reverse our planet's perils. Have you listened to our recent episodes? In June, we heard from Carrie Radloff, Sierra Club activist in Iowa. In July, Michael Patrick White Eagle O'Connor, Native American artist and earth activist. In July, Lori Payer, head of Strong Women of the Four Directions. In September, we talked with George Gaskell, who has served on his school board and city council and urges us to make an impact for the good through local governments. Do listen. You're sure to pick up thoughts you'll value. We certainly did as we created those episodes. Also, please subscribe to my Simpler Living Daily Nudge to get quick reminders of our blogs, our podcast episodes, and other intriguing happenings and events, such as Nonconform Freely celebrations, ways to honor rites of passage and holidays without consumption. Please tell us your thoughts on these subjects. Leave a message on the Jubilee One Earth Economics and Simpler Living Works Facebook pages. Well, time to wrap up this episode. You can subscribe to this podcast under the names The Common Good Podcast and Simple Living Works at your favorite podcast service. Urge your friends to do the same. Until next time, this is Jerry Iverson of Simple Living Works with co-host Lee Van Ham of Jubilee One Earth Economics, wishing you well as we strive together to bring simpler One Earth living into being for the common good.
Simply live, learn to live simply, so others can live.